show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. As always, I am your host, Jeff Hurt. With me, of course, the indefatigable Michael Engel. Mike, we are 5 days away from race day with you against Kamler, the fake Ned. Tell me, how are you feeling?
I'm reasonably confident that I will finish the race. It's tough because up until the last couple days, the weather's been soapy and like cold that it's like I get off work and it's like 5:30, 6 or whatever. And, you know, I don't want to go run outside when it's 20 degrees out and dark and stuff. So
ain't nobody got time for that.
So that's tough. So it's mostly been stuff on a treadmill, which isn't quite the same as running outside on, you know, a trail. So I don't know. I feel okay though. It's, I've been using like this Couch to 5K app and, I'm like 2 weeks behind where it says I should be, but at the same time, it's like I can see the chunks that kind of give me a way to approach it to where I can actually finish it, and I think I can do it in pretty reasonable and respectable time. Who's never run this, so I feel okay. We'll see, because, I mean, we've still got 5 days for me to actually have to go do it. And then I might be like 5 minutes into it and be like, this was a mistake. But I don't know. I feel all right. I feel pretty good about it. It's we'll just see. I mean, I'll have a report probably in a week, assuming I make it. So.
Well, you know, I was gonna try and film the whole thing walking behind you guys, and then I decided not to because I might actually finish ahead of Kamler if that was the case. So.
It's true. All he's been doing is he's just been pushing his book lately, so I might have an edge on
that's
him.
True.
Just based on that, so that's pretty good.
You could tell him that if he wants the book sold in your store, that he might have to trip near the finish line.
It would be like Mr. Mom or something where he tanks. Just to be sure that she doesn't get retribution or something. But no, I already sent him the purchase order, so it's too late to throw that over his head. You know, just one of those things. But yeah, that'll be March 14th, so I don't know who else out there who listens.
It starts and ends at Kelly's, correct? Or does it just end there?
It's right on that same block, which it's a good place to start and it's a good place to end, so.
Even better place to finish,
It really is, and it's going to be a fine place. You know, there's pizza right there, and there's a lot of good beer. So I think that's going to be a nice place to land and recoup.
What time?
10 o'clock. I should double-check that, but I think the race starts
in the
morning.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. And finishes. I don't know when it's going to finish. I should be able to get done in less than an hour, I think, pretty easily. So,
yeah, I mean, 3.1 miles.
It's a 4 mile race, but even if you're doing 10 minutes a mile,
I thought you said it was a.
That's 5K. Just the app that I'm using. They don't have a couch to 4 mile app.
Oh, so it's not actually a 5K race. It's just a start here.
Yeah,
end
it's
race.
Just a 4 mile race. I don't know why that is. I don't know why it's four. Maybe it's a traditional thing, but that's what it is. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, even so, it's still, you know, that's not. I mean, it's long. It's a long race, but it's not like
it's not a marathon, but it's not.
No.
You know, just a jaunt.
Yeah,
either.
It's something I've actually had to like put in some thought towards how I'm gonna actually do it, because I don't want to like kill myself in the first 15 minutes, but at the same time I want to, you know, finish at a reasonable time. I don't want to be there like an hour and 20 minutes in, and I don't think that would. I think I even walking, I think I could finish it faster than that. But
oh yeah, if you were walking at a brisk pace, you could finish within.
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna be okay. I'll just be sore, but that's okay.
What doesn't kill you. Pain is worth it.
Yeah,
right.
I've got a good playlist. It's got some songs from the Royals playoff run, and some Rocky IV songs on there, and some other things. So I think I'm good. I just have to plug in and use that and
get in the zone, you know.
It's pretty much it. It's kind of a weird thing because I've never been a person who runs for the sake of running. It's always like if I'm running, it's because I'm chasing a ball.
It's because something's chasing me. Yeah.
Right. And so, but yeah, I mean, there have been times where it's like, oh, I've just realized I went like 5 minutes in a row and didn't even seem like I went five. And it's like, oh, that's cool. That's something. So
yeah.
I guess that's a side effect, I guess. So I'll take it.
You know what they say? Running is 90% mental and 100% physical. So.
Do they say that? Who says that?
I may have screwed up that quote. But moving on. So this Saturday, March 14th, Kelly's Westport Inn, show up, send them off, be there when they get back. Hopefully Ingle will be back first and Kamler shortly after, and no severe injuries occur.
Yeah.
So that's this weekend. Either way, it's going to be a great time, so you all should show up and enjoy it. but moving on to more strictly Royals-based things.
Right.
Biggest news of the week, Mike, we had some disheartening news about one of the Royals pitchers. You know it's coming every year. It's somebody. It's like a spin the bottle, you know? Mm-hmm. Who's it going to be this year, you know? Spins around and it lands on Tommy John surgery, and this year it points at Tim Collins.
So,
oh, hey, come on down.
Yeah.
You get a free pass and a major league salary for a year. So, unfortunate for Tim Collins, certainly, because, you know, he's been a valuable piece of this bullpen for the last couple of years. So, I mean, I don't think it's crushing. It's not like if the Royals, if it was, you know, somebody else, I'm not going to say anybody because I don't want to jinx it, you know. I'm
right.
Not close enough to Wood to start knocking on it, but you know, there are worse players that could have had this injury that would have affected the bullpen more, but it's not a loss. It's definitely you know, something the Royals are going to feel, and that's something they're going to have to do to fix. And you know, it's not only is Tim Collins a valuable piece in general, but he's like the only true left-hander in the bullpen. And the only, I mean, until Finnegan came up last year, he was really the only left-hander that was doing much work in the bullpen at all. So it's something that, you know, does this stunt the ability for the Royals to give Finnegan a chance to develop as a starter? Are they going to have to start the major league year with him in the bullpen because they need a left-hander? You know, is this, I mean, the Royals put so much importance on the righty-lefty thing, and, you know, while I think they may put a little bit too much importance on it, it doesn't mean that it's not important. it's still a legitimate, I mean, the stats don't lie, and the splits will typically show you that it does matter. So, the question is, who's the replacement, Mike?
It's difficult to say. I think that right after he came off the mound, I think the assumption right away was that Finnegan was going to be the guy who would come in. And you know, Finnegan was great last year in September and through the playoffs, especially against lefties. He's got the stuff and the makeup to be a left-handed reliever and a lefty specialist like that. He's also good enough to get a lot of righties out, and that's why the Royals really, 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 really want to still see him as a starter. But at the same time, you know, if he's the piece in that bullpen that makes them the best overall bullpen, you know, they're still kind of in a win now mode. I mean, you've got guys like Morales and Rios and Volquez who are all on short-term contracts. They're still trying to get guys in that the Hosmer window over the next couple of years. And so it's one of those kind of situations where, yeah, they probably aren't going to just go with some project guy there. But with Collins, he's interesting because he's never been like a specialist. He's always pretty much had the same split against lefties and righties. And so in that sense, I don't think it's not only is he kind of down the food chain in that bullpen, but I think it's also that he's never really been a specialized guy. And so maybe this is an opportunity if they do have somebody, they can use them as a specialist. Just against lefties, just, you know, Francisco Bueno last year kind of filled that role for part of the year. But I don't think anybody ever really bought him as somebody. And the Royals, you know, never really seemed to entertain bringing him back. But I think Finnegan's probably the best guy to fit in that role. But I think if you're looking at, it's kind of like trying to balance, okay, can this guy do it adequately enough to where you can help the short term versus also helping the long term? Because I think long term, they want to find out that Finnegan can start. And I think we've talked about him a couple times here. I think there's still a good chance that he can start. And I think that, you know, in 2-3 years, it benefits the Royals if they're able to find out if he can start or not. And so that's the biggest thing with Finnegan, is if he's a reliever this year, that just is another year he's not able to figure out if he can be that starter, even if it's like a number three, number four starter. But they do have some other options. They signed Franklin Morales just before spring training opened up. He pitched a couple innings today, did well.
Cousin of Kendrys Morales, by the way.
Is he actually?
No, I'm just
okay. I would have bought it. So
yeah.
But he, you know, he had a pretty bad year with Colorado last year, but it's also Colorado.
Yeah.
He was a starter for most of it, but I think if you asked him to just be a lefty out of the bullpen, I think he could handle it. They've also kind of brought up Brian Flynn, who came over in the Aaron Crow trade. He could be a guy that they would use out of the bullpen, especially considering that your starting rotation is pretty much full, you know, even though he's started with the Marlins and in the minors. If he's going to make the team as a reliever, I think he'd take it. He could also be in Omaha as depth. So that's another one of those kind of things similar to Finnegan, where it's like, well, maybe he has more value as a depth starter that they can call on down there. Chris Dwyer is another guy they might be able to use there, though his stuff has really kind of fallen off. Joe Patterson's a guy that I'm not really that familiar with him, but he's kind of got a sidearm delivery from reports I've seen. I haven't seen him pitch, so that's just how kind of under the radar he is. But if he's got that, I mean, that's kind of tailor-made to be a lefty specialist, because he's coming right at the lefty, and if he can just pitch well, that would be kind of a guy who could fill that role. And Buddy Bauman's another kind of name that's out there, who he's had some success in lower minors, and has just kind of been a guy. So I think there are options. They could also maybe find somebody that they could sign who's still kind of hanging out there. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be Finnegan, but I think he's probably the favorite. I think it's just one of those things they have to see if they want to actually use him in that kind of role. And I don't think Finnegan's thrown yet this spring in a game, so I don't know if that tips the scale one way or another, or if it just shows that they're waiting to kind of find out the final word on Collins. Last I heard, he was still seeking a second opinion, but I mean, there's damage to his ligament. So, I mean, he's going to be out for some time. It just, I guess, depends on what route and how bad the damage is. But I think there are options. I think if Morales can do it, I think, you know, he's got experience in the big leagues, and I think he could probably hold down that role. You know, big picture, I think that's probably going to be okay. It doesn't impact many of the other bullpen decisions that you have to make, and it doesn't really impact anybody in the minors. So if I had to kind of lean one way, I'd say Morales is the guy that they at least start with, and then Finnegan gets his opportunity to start in Double A or Triple A, or wherever he ends up. So that's kind of the options as I see them. I guess John Lamb's kind of in there, but I think it's another thing where they still need to see that he can actually consistently get guys out, and so many questions. So I don't know.
I think the Royals just need to go out and find somebody like Pat Venditti or whatever that guy's name is to just be a switch pitcher. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I haven't seen him actually throw. Thing. I've seen his glove. It looks like it looks foreign. It looks alien. It's weird. But that would be one thing. It's kind of an untapped market there.
That's a huge market inefficiency.
Right.
The switch pitcher. Yes.
But it
was always interesting to me that with Tim Collins, he was a guy who, as you said, his splits never really indicated that he should be a lefty specialist or that he even was, because it was just he did pretty much equally as well against lefties and righties. But at times, they used him like a specialist, which is why we kind of criticize the Royals for being sticks in the mud, statistically speaking, because you have, Ned Yost and, Tim Collins, left-handed pitcher. He should get guys out.
This is what he does.
Left-handed guys out easier.
He's left-handed, isn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, overall, the statistics would support that line of thinking from all left-handed pitchers. However,
in this particular one
is different, and you're supposed to be able to and should account for that. But Finnegan never really – it's an extremely small sample size to work with. Mm-hmm. But just from what I saw, he didn't look like a pitcher who's going to give you a huge advantage one side or the other. Left-handed versus right-handed, and I mean, his stats aren't even worth really digging into because there's such a small sample. He only had 7 innings pitched in the regular season last year, but they did skew towards being better against right-handers, oddly enough. But that's such a small sample, it's hardly worth really putting any value in. So I'm not really sure what the line on him was. I mean, I knew what his the general consensus was coming out, but in terms of being a specialist reliever, if that was kind of a thought that people were having, I mean, do you remember when he was drafted? I know there were concerns about his shoulder, or was mm-hmm. it his shoulder? Or I think it was his shoulder.
Yeah, it was his shoulder. And I think it's more along the lines of a lot of the reports were like, yeah, can he start? Maybe, but if he relieves, he could be, an elite setup guy, a great closer kind of guy, one of those big guys at the back of the bullpen, which, tells me that, he can get both sides of the plate out pretty well. His stuff is better to fit in that kind of left-handed role because, like with Collins, his two pitches are fastball, curveball, and he throws a changeup. The curve and the change don't really work that well for facing left-handed batters. His curve is an up and down. It doesn't really cut across the plate that much. And the changeup isn't really going to, he's usually going to use that against opposite side batters. So that doesn't really work well. But, most of the time when you see the lefty specialists, they're guys who have fastball slider. And they use, that's why it works against lefties, because you've got a slider that – cuts off and goes to the outer edge of the plate, and it can make guys uncomfortable. You look like Andrew Miller, who's really good at doing that, and back in the day, Randy Johnson, that's what made him such a menace against lefties, is that he threw hard and he had that slider that just wiped out. And so I think that would be one of the things that people would be looking at on Finnegan and kind of putting him into that spot where he would be their primary guy to get lefties out. I would bet they wouldn't use – I mean, I don't think they'd use him as like a lefty one-out guy, like in the mold of Jesse Orozco or guys like that. They'd feel comfortable with him coming in against three guys if it was lefty-righty-lefty or, lefty-righty and they're going to pinch hit, that kind of situation. I think they'd be okay with using him that way because, again, he can get both sides of the plate out pretty well. And I think he's just a good pitcher, just in general. So that's gonna work in his favor. I would still say if they think that they want to take their best 25 from day one when the season starts, he's probably going to be in the bullpen. I don't know that that benefits them long term, though. In 5 years, he might be, much more valuable as a starter than as a setup guy would be to them. But, a lot of things will change. I mean, by that time, Wade Davis won't be around. Greg Holland won't be around. Who knows on Herrera? So, maybe he is going to be the guy like a Billy Wagner, a lefty closer who just comes in and burns everybody out. So that would be extremely valuable, too. It just wouldn't be as valuable as, a good number three starter could be in my eyes.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah. And it's but just to stick on the left-handed closers thing, I mean, this is kind of off topic, but hey, that's what we do. it's one of those things where kind of like a left-handed catcher almost, where it's hardly ever seen. Most of it is because, there are lots of legitimate factors that get in the way. For left-handed catcher, the fact that the majority of people are right-handed batters, and therefore it's going to be harder to make that throw to second base more often.
Yeah.
Because the right-handed batter is going to be in the way of a left-handed catcher. But that's a small thing, beside the point, but just like kind of one of those, it reminds me of what you said when you were at the media day or whatever. Not media day. What was it? The
digital
social media night or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ned Yost, somebody brought up a good point and he said, that's a good idea, but you won't see me trying it. I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what it reminds me of, but you need to take someone like Finnegan and put him in the best situation to succeed, whatever that is. And I agree that if you're just literally saying top 25 guys on this squad to start the season, then Finnegan's probably on the team and he's probably in the bullpen now that mm-hmm. Collins is hurt. And we still, let's not forget, don't know what the Royals have in Luke Hochaver now. I mean, we know what he was mm-hmm. in the bullpen for that 1 year when he had a fantastic season in 2013, but we don't know what he is now. He hasn't, he's coming off Tommy John surgery. He hasn't really pitched that much. I don't think he's pitching. Update is.
Is he going tomorrow for the first time? I guess we'll see how that goes. That he could easily start on the disabled list. He could start in the bullpen. I don't know. It's a really weird bullpen because they're so – I mean, you've got the obvious guys, and then you've got Lewis Coleman, who is out of options, who they'll want to keep around. They've got that Yandel Gustave, who I guess we've been pronouncing his name incorrectly this whole time, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Rule 5 guy. So who knows on him if they want to try to keep him around or not, or if they're going to try to work out some kind of deal where they can keep him in the organization but don't have to stash him on the roster. I think Hochaver, I mean, you could go Holland, Davis, Herrera, Frazier, Hochaver, Coleman, and that's a pretty strong six guys in the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, if Lewis Coleman is your worst – and assuming Hochaver comes back,
right,
like his old self, if Lewis Coleman is your worst pitcher in your bullpen, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah,
so
it's tough, and
there is that.
They've brought up the idea that hey, maybe they'll do an 8-man bullpen, which is kind of tough to do. That would leave you with a bench of Eric Kratz, who I think is probably going to be the backup catcher. He's hitting better than Pena so far. You'll have Dyson, who's going to be the fourth outfielder. And then, Omar Infante, who's just got a cortisone shot, has bone spurs for the second spring in a row in his throwing elbow. So, I mean, what does that do there? Do you end up with Christian Colon as the utility guy, or is he going to be the starting second baseman? So if you start the year with just, Colon, Kratz, and Dyson on the bench – Maybe you can get by with that, but at the same time, it doesn't leave you a lot of flexibility within the game to do a whole lot, especially if you want to do any kind of pinch running or defensive substitutions of any kind.
And if there's one thing we learned, it's that Ned Yost loves having options.
Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to do with that. I mean, because they also signed Chris Young to a big league deal, and he's going to be on the team. Dayton Moore was like, he got a major league deal. They signed him for the purpose of having him on the roster. He'll be kind of like, starting pitching depth, and he'll be like a middle reliever. So, he's going to be in there too, taking up a spot. So that almost leans more towards they're going to have to be an 8-man bullpen, which is, they didn't substitute a whole lot last year, but from what the Royals have said, there's a good article that came out like a week and a half ago talking about Alex Rios and the difference between having him in right versus Aoki, where, it's easier to make on-the-fly adjustments in the outfield, which was really good and really interesting read. So they feel like they don't have to make those defensive changes late in the game like they did last year, where Aoki would almost always come out, especially in the last half of the season. So if that's the case, then you have a little more flexibility, but at the same time, you still got, Cologne, who's really only a second base, third base, emergency shortstop type of player, and Dyson, who's just your one extra outfielder, and then one backup catcher. So you're really kind of stuck. I think it just benefits teams to have that fourth bench spot go to a position player, or, the fourth spot on the bench, using a position player. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to work out for that.
It's almost like what they really need is like one of those super utility guys, like a Ben Zobrist or like a David Howard back in the day or whatever, you can play some infield, he can play some outfield, not going to be as good as, a fourth outfielder or a utility infielder, but if he can play all those positions, it at least gives you a little bit more flexibility. Mm-hmm. If you want to expand that bullpen and you want to keep those guys on the roster, the Royals almost have relievers now, an embarrassment of riches almost, if you will.
Yeah.
Again, assuming Hochaver comes back to where he was, then, like you said, they've got your Herrera, Davis, Holland, Hochaver, Frazier, Coleman, and then you throw Chris Young in there, and then you've got Chris Medlin, who hopefully will be ready to come back mid-season. Then you even go even further. You got Sean Manaea, Kyle Zimmer, who could all come up and put in the bullpen. Or if you need to, if you think they're ready to jump into the starting role, then you bring up a Kyle Zimmer or Sean Manaea, and then somebody like Jeremy Guthrie gets bumped to be the long man. If depending on where the Royals' situation is in mid-season when the trade deadline rolls around, they're going to have to look long and hard about putting together a reliever package to getting somebody. Maybe they do try and acquire a Ben Zobrist by giving up a package for him, or maybe they do try and get, depending on what the situation is with Omar Infante at that point, a second baseman or a backup infielder, or maybe you get, something. But it's definitely going to give them some options, and that's even if they're, even if they're cruising and they're in first or second place and they're in the playoff race, you still need to be looking for that extra inch that's going to make you better. So it'll be interesting to see how the bullpen shakes out, where it kind of falls in terms of who the main guys are, and if the Royals will be willing to make a move. I mean, if Hochaver comes back in his 2013 form, he was basically Wade Davis from last year in 2013.
Yeah.
So, if they've got those two guys, you got to trade one of them. And not because for any reason in particular other than, they've got a lot of value. So get something out of them.
Yeah, other teams will be looking to get a guy like that.
There would be – how many teams in this league you think would just kill for a guy like Wade Davis to be their closer? And he's, seventh inning or eighth inning guy. So
It's a tough crunch. I mean, it's like there's no huge standout guys, but the way that the Royals are constructed, it's like if Hochaver is healthy and can go, I mean, he's got to be in there. And Lewis Coleman is someone that he's good enough when he's been good that, you know, and it could just be one small adjustment from last season, you know, that turns it back on. That's all it might take. And if he's good again, you know, like he's been in his first couple of years in the league, well, you don't want to just let that guy go through on waivers. You know, you don't want to just give him up for nothing. So if you can keep him around, that's an important thing too. So I'm not sure. And the Infante question comes up, and who knows on that. I mean, I think there was a point last year where Colon looked like he might be someone who could play second base every day and do a better job than Infante was doing. You know, not just the injuries, but Infante just wasn't hitting that great. I mean, he had a shoulder problem. He had the same elbow problem. He had a back problem that he went on the DL for. You know, he got hit in the face. Not much you can do on that.
Yeah.
He just ran into all of those things, and Colon seemed like he was playing well enough. And so, you know, you get that in the mix too. So if they do open the year where Infante is still hurt and Colon has to be the second baseman, I'm not sure where you go with that. I think Whit Merrifield might be like the best beneficiary because he's played everywhere already, yeah. You know, in Omaha, and he's having a good spring so far. So he might be that guy just as a replacement level super sub who's not going to be great but can play every position pretty capably, I guess. You know, maybe even if they do have four bench spots, he might be that guy who can fill that role too. But I just feel like they're going to open with eight guys in the bullpen, and it's just not going to matter. There's not going to be a super utility guy. It's going to be you have what you have, and you just get by with whatever you've got. It's weird.
Yeah, and in many ways, the season, this is going to sound like I'm just going to say it, but in many ways, the season almost kind of hinges on that whole Omar Infante second base thing. And by that, I mean, we've talked about how, you know, Kendrys Morales, Billy Butler, you're not really gaining or losing much there either way in terms of offensive production. Alex Rios, Nori Aoki, assuming Rios is close to what he was last year, more so than prior years, you're not really losing or gaining much. Now, if he's the Alex Rios from, you know, 2013 and earlier, then you are gaining a little
bit. Yeah, you're gaining a lot. And he's got three homers in spring already, though.
Yes, yeah, you know,
they play in Arizona, so
right.
Standard disclaimer applies.
Yes, but point being, one of the biggest leaps from the kind of holes in the lineup from last year, if you will, would have been in second base because Omar Infante has shown in the past that he can be a guy who can consistently give you some offensive output. You know, he has his issues with plate discipline and approach and all that kind of stuff, but he showed, you know, the few years before last year that he could put up some good offensive numbers. So it was a thing where if he could improve, you know, he's not going to be that guy that hits 320, but
he can
go from hitting 250 or whatever he hit last year to 280 and give you, you know, five more home runs than he hit last year, which is something that's entirely possible from a guy with Omar Infante's skill level, then you're like, that's going to make the lineup look completely different, and that's going to put the Royals in a much better position. So I was kind of looking forward to Omar Infante being hopefully healthy and taking a big, not really a step, but kind of returning to form, and that was going to help the offense a lot. But it does not appear that that's going to be the case at this point, at least in the early going of the season. So
I don't think so.
It's you got to wonder if, you know, can they go to bat with Christian Colon, literally and figuratively? And, you know, does he give them an improvement over the course of a whole season? Is that something where you look to make a trade? You know, what's your confidence level that not only, you know, Infante's gonna, I mean, he will be back, but what's he gonna be like when he gets back? It's obviously not gonna be an immediate thing. I mean, I don't know. You hear more about the bone spurs with pitching than you do really position players. So I'm not certain. I haven't done a ton of research on how much bone spurs and things like that will affect a position player, you know, with his swing at the plate with, you know, throwing to first base, things like that. I'm not certain.
Yeah.
But
it's and it's, you know, it was something that was a problem last year too, and they did the same treatment. They gave him a cortisone shot, and you know, I don't know if it was ever 100% all year. But you know, they say that as long as the bone spurs don't break off and start floating around in there, you know, you're not going to really damage anything. It's just a pain tolerance thing. But still, you know, you've got to be able to make the throw regularly. And, you know, if that's the difference between turning a double play or not, that can be a pretty big deal. You know, if that's the difference between getting good extension on a swing, that can be significant. And so I don't know. I don't think it's something that's necessarily going to – it's not going to heal itself. You know, it's just going to be something he can deal with, or they can do surgery. And I don't think they want to do surgery. I think they would feel comfortable with Cologne full-time at second if it was like, you know, Infante needed to miss a month, maybe even 2 months. But if he needed to miss like half the year or two-thirds of the year, I just don't think they'd feel comfortable with him there. I could be wrong, but it just seems like they've – they've had him hiding in AAA for so long that they've just kind of, you know, they're willing to go with him if they have to, but I think that they would really prefer not to.
And they'd much rather be in the situation where they didn't have to.
Right, yeah, where they can throw him in every, you know, maybe even two times a week. You know, that would be probably okay. You know, just to give Infante a rest through most of the time, you know, most parts of the season. I think they'd be okay with that, but it just seems like they're not fully bought into him, and, you know, with good reason. He's never really excelled at anything in the minors. He's always just kind of been, you know, oh, well, he's capable.
He's been a guy.
Yeah, he's been a guy. He's a guy, and I think he can be average, close to average, but it's, you know, it's not like that's kind of his ceiling, and his floor is that he's just replacement level. So it's tough to kind of go along with that. So, Infante, you kind of hoped he'd be healthy and could have a bounce back year and give you, you know, 280, 290 and have some pop and just be a little bit above average and give you okay defense and go along that way. But he, you know, it seems like it's more of the same. He's just going to be hurt all year. Because I just, like I said, I don't think this is going to be a thing that's going to go away. I think it's going to be something that he's going to deal with all year unless something happens that they have to go in and do surgery. And it just seems like they're not going to do that until it's absolutely necessary. So,
yeah, which
tough.
I don't know how often it becomes absolutely necessary to do the surgery, but
yeah, I don't either.
It's kind of that give and take thing. I don't know if give and take's the right word, but so
it seems like they should have done it in the off season.
Yeah, like you look at Ervin Santana, right? And everyone said, you know, oh well, his elbow, like he had elbow issues a few years ago. And it was a kind of a precursor to Tommy John. It was just a matter of, well, it's not an issue yet, but someday it's going to pop and I'll have to have the surgery.
It's a win.
Yeah, and it hasn't happened yet. But then you had Luke Hochaver. Same thing happened to him. Last year it popped. He had to have the Tommy John surgery. So then that becomes the question. How often does this become an issue? How confident are you that it won't be? Because if it's a 50-50 or greater chance that it will end up in surgery, just do it now, get it over with, and that way you can hopefully have Omar Infante at full health by mid-season, and then your second half rush, he'll be ready to go. Whereas you don't want to get into a semi-groove, and then June comes along, Infante has to have surgery, he's out for a while, you've got to find somebody to fix or to fill in the gap, and then you've got to change the lineup around, and then he'll make it back just by September. And if you're in a playoff run, do you insert him? And he's been out for a while. You know, there's too many questions. If it's at even, you know, a 50-50 or greater risk, I think you got to get it done. But I like I said, I don't know. That's just kind of my thought on if it was at that level. So it's
a tough time of year for them to have to make that call. So it's just like, I don't know what they're going to do. And I guess we'll see if, I don't think they expect him to be back, like, right away, but I think they expect him to be back before the season starts. So I guess that's encouraging. But at the same time, like, how effective is he going to be all year if he's just going to be battling with this same problem over and over and over?
You're not doing anybody any good. You're not doing Omar any good, and you're not doing the Royals any good.
And they've still got a couple years on his contract, too. So it's you know, they've got long-term ramifications, too, on what they're going to do. Because it's just, you know, if it continues, you know, they would still have to probably get to the offseason, and maybe then that's when they have to look at it. And if he just doesn't want to have that surgery, or doctors say that it's not necessary, then, you know, you keep doing it. You keep going on the same path every year. It's just like, well, I don't know what to tell you on that. So I don't know. He's an interesting player to follow this spring, and it's kind of frustrating that he's not able to come in and contribute right away. And, you know, there's still, it's up in the air on when he will contribute, especially when the Royals don't have they do have a ready-made option, but as we've covered, it's like, it's not your most thrilling option to go.
Yeah, with. You're not setting the world on fire with the option.
It's one question mark for another, and you're still kind of like, okay, well.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't end up with Chris Getz coming out of retirement like Roger Dorn.
Oh, Lord.
I'm all right with Christian Colon handling the duties. You know, I mean, Whit Merrifield's someone who can do something, and Chesler Cuthbert's played second base late last year in the minors, and they've had him in for a couple innings this spring already. I don't think he could probably be like the super utility guy, but I think he could be like an emergency guy if they needed to get by. I mean, they tried Danny Valencia at second last year, so anything's possible, I guess.
Yep, that's one thing that we've learned with the Royals, right? Anything is possible.
Yeah. He's a second baseman now because we say so. Like Mark Tian is like, yeah, okay. That was an experiment. Lasted like 8 games and he was in right field. So I don't know what's going to happen with that, but Infante being hurt just isn't, it's just not a good thing. I guess
not a good thing. Bad timing, the whole deal.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Royals are kind of behind it on that, but maybe Colon will hit. He botched a couple plays in the field. Apparently, in the other game, like yesterday or the day before or something. So that's fun.
Yes.
Just great.
Just fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the major news. There's really not a ton else going on with the Royals here.
Not. Other than Bubba Starling can't get a hit. He struck out 5 times in 7 at-bats, so that's neat.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Alex Gordon still recovering from wrist surgery this offseason, but I think he's taking BP tomorrow and probably going to get into games soon, so that's thankfully
positive,
a good thing.
Moving forward with that there.
Yeah. Royals, I mean, I jotted this down as one of our prep notes. It's not really, really worth talking about, but the Royals do have some, like, guys that they'll have available in AAA from the minors who could probably step in. They actually have some guys. We'll see if they make it through the end of camp.
That's confirmed. They do have some guys.
They have a lot of guys. I don't know how many of these guys are actually going to break camp being in the Royals organization, major or minor league level, because they're probably guys that will have to get dropped off. But like Raymond Fuentes is out there. Moises Sierra have played a few games. Paulo Orlando and Brett Eibner's hit 2 homers, including one that apparently cleared the bullpen in a game, which I think even in Arizona, you have to call that legit.
I mean, he was always a power.
All or nothing power guy. Yeah. He's
going to
be
a 3 outcome hitter type.
Yeah. He'd strike out 200 times in the big leagues if he got a full season. Lane Adams, Whit Merrifield played some outfield, played some today actually, and threw a guy out. Jorge Bonifacio. So I mean, you know, some of those guys could maybe jump up, and you might see him through this year because I mean, you've got Rios was hurt last year for a time. Who knows? Maybe this is all a mirage, what he's doing. Gordon, if he has complications from that wrist. You know, Lorenzo Cain has injury history. So, I don't know. I would bet you're probably going to see a couple of these guys for a little bit at some point this year. But, you know, none of them, again, nothing to write home about. I do kind of like the potential of Eibner if he can ever figure it out. But, like I said, I think he's going to be all or nothing. But he's probably got a better hit tool than Bubba Starling, so I don't know what that says.
Yeah, don't know that that's hard, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
Bubba.
I mean,
if you think back about that Bubba Starling thing, it's just going to haunt. Because, I mean, I know we've talked about this in the email.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up.
Because if the Royals, the guy taken right after Starling was Anthony Rendon, who at like 23 years old last year was a Silver Slugger playing second base for the Nationals. All-star, MVP candidate. I don't think he was an all-star, actually. But he's MVP candidate. He was huge in the second half. The Royals could have gotten him instead of Bubba. I don't know. This could be totally different. They, you know, the Infante question wouldn't even be there, maybe. Maybe you have that money able to go get somebody else for the rotation. The team could look completely different. And instead, Bubba Starling's pretty much on, like, college football watch right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's truly unfortunate because, and it's, you know, I respect the tough situation that the Royals were in at the time.
Yeah.
Because Bubba Starling was a consensus top five, top ten pick, right? If the Royals hadn't picked him at number five, he would have gone number six or seven.
Yeah.
Or whatever that year. I mean, he was. The Royals were not out of line by picking him. You know, the Royals were.
It wasn't a reach by any stretch. A lot of teams, you know, I saw just looking back at it, a lot of the pre-draft write-ups by, you know, guys like John Sickles and Keith Law and things like that, they had Bubba as like a top two or three pick overall. You know,
yeah.
The same question of, you know, okay, how's he going to adjust to the competition level? How's he going to hit? Is he going to be able to put his tools to work? You know, all the questions that, you know, we kind of have answers to now, they were there, but the upside was crazy. I mean, you know, if he was able to hit, I mean, he'd be pushing right now to be at the big league level, but he's never been able to hit for various reasons. And we've talked that, you know, Jason Parks has brought up, you know, some of the developmental things of how, you know, people who play baseball all the time kind of get that recognition a lot easier. And then, you know, he had LASIK surgery, so that you thought might do something, didn't really help him.
Nope.
His swing's always kind of had a little hitch to it. So it's just like there's so many different things, and it just seems like stuff that he was able to get away with playing in Gardner, Kansas.
Yeah, when you can out-talent people, then...
Yeah. Yeah, you can get by on some mistakes, but when you get to a place where everybody's got a book on you and they're adjusting for your adjustments, then that's where the problem is, and that's where he's at. And so that was it's a pretty pivotal moment. And like you said, I can't blame them for picking him. I mean, it wasn't a bad pick. It was a risky pick. It was a gamble.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
It could have just as easily paid off in big ways as it is now, where it looks like it was a pretty big miss.
Yeah, because the ceiling on him, as you mentioned, was MVP candidate. You know, unfortunately, the floor was pretty much what he is now,
yeah.
Somebody that never makes it past double A. But yeah. At the same time, you know, the Royals drafting Hunter Dozier number 8 overall was more of a reach, theoretically speaking, you know, based on talent and based on projections and mock drafts and all that. That was more of a reach than the Bubba Starling pick was. And Hunter Dozier is just going to blow by Starling in terms of development.
Oh, he's all right.
I mean, he was a college guy, so they're on different scales in terms of how quickly they develop and all that. But
he's already in double A, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unfortunate, not only because it's a wasted top five draft pick for the Royals, but just because Bubba Starling does have a lot of talent, and he was an exciting player for a brief period until it just kind of became inevitable. You heard whispers that people, you know, within the Royals developmental organization weren't really sure that he had much future ahead of him. We had Jace, like Mike said, Jason Parks came on and said there was a fundamental flaw in not just his swing, but his cognitive ability to hit a baseball that, you know, and he had, I mean, this wasn't just like a weird theory. I mean, he had legitimate science to back up what he was saying. And the ultimate point being, not only is he having issues, but he may never be able to fix them, because you can fix a hitch in your swing, but
if you can't recognize the pitch.
Correctly from what Parks was saying, it was that, you know, if the reason baseball starts so young and it's so important to get so many reps now when you're younger is because the brain develops at a certain pace, mm-hmm. and the ability to see and hit a baseball is something that you have to develop with your brain's natural development. And if you don't foster that, then once your brain reaches a certain point, it can't, like, it basically can't learn certain things. You know, it can't.
Yeah, kids can learn languages much faster.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to bring up. Exactly.
So, yeah, it's the same thing. And, like, when, you know, Bubba, who was also an older draft pick, like, he turned 18 shortly after the draft, or no, I think 19, he turned 19 right after the draft.
August, I think.
And there's enough of that research that's been out there about, you know, the developmental path is so steep when you're a 17-year-old developing to be an 18-year-old, than 18, you know, each subsequent year. And so he was already behind it anyway, plus, you know, everything else. So, I don't know. It is unfortunate because it, you know, it was a big investment. And, I mean, hey, maybe he figures it out. Maybe he repeats high A. He does more on scouting and preparation and is able to anticipate a little better. Maybe he does work on it and gets somewhere. But he's more of an afterthought now than anything else. I mean, I don't think anybody expects a whole lot out of him. So that's pretty crappy from a the Royals organization standpoint. But I mean, it's not like he's dropped out and he's going to go enroll at Nebraska next week, but
no, you know, maybe, like, next month, but not next week.
Who knows? Yeah.
If he gets in next month, he can still get in for spring ball for the fall season here.
I think it'd be funny if he didn't end up going to Nebraska. Cause everybody, if you bring up Bubba Starling, all the Nebraska fans on Twitter start tweeting about him. And it's like, I think it should be funny if he went to, like, Ole Miss or something.
That would be hilarious. Maybe he goes to KU, right? Home state, new coach, you know, just do something different.
Maybe.
Bubba, maybe. Doubt it, because he'd probably get too much crap from Royals fans that are close by. But
yeah,
that's
not
that's
to name names, issue. But Brian McGinnon.
Yeah. Oh, that Chris would Kamler. Be a, that would just be a the cornucopia whole of ridicule ready to be dumped upon this poor soul.
It really would. So, it'd be years of build-up plus just the general animosity.
So advice from the Kansas City Baseball Vault to Bubba Starling: don't play football at Kansas. There you go.
Most everybody follows that advice too, so that's okay.
Yes, yeah. So it's not
except,
just
that. Except Ben Heaney and Corey Shepard and that's about,
you know,
it.
Aqib Talib. There's been a few over the years that have,
oh yeah, I'm just thinking,
spat the in the face of said advice and made a future for themselves. But the majority
Daryl
of people,
Daryl Stuckey, he's like a three-time Pro
Bowler. Yeah, Chris Harris, he's an All-Pro.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
You know, but
exceptions, not the rules.
Exceptions, exactly, not the rules. Hopefully, it becomes.
And all those are on the same team too. They were all
Orange
Bowl team.
They were all part of that Orange Bowl team or whatever. So
it's a long time ago.
A long time ago. So anyway, I think that's kind of covers it for Royals. I got something that I wanted to bring up. Mike, have you ever watched the show Orphan Black? Have you watched this?
Two episodes of it.
Damn.
Your friend sat me down and was like, hey, you need to watch this. And I watched it and I was like, this is okay. All right. Okay. I couldn't get into it. Like, I know a lot of people have really gotten into it. I just couldn't get into it, and I don't know if it was because I was watching other things at the time or if something in the actual show. It was just like, I don't know. I think the pacing didn't feel right for the first couple episodes, which maybe that's not fair because it was the first couple episodes, but you know, it never really grabbed me like it did a lot of other people.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't so sure about it at the start, but I bought the wife Amazon Prime for Christmas, right? That was her requested gift before people start to give me crap about what I bought her. But I actually bought her a different gift, and I returned it to buy her Amazon Prime. Anyway.
It's a gift that keeps on giving, though.
Yeah, exactly, the whole year. And so we were like, let's look for a show to watch, Orphan Black. Heard a lot of good things. Seemed kind of weird. Wasn't sure. Watched it. We kind of got hooked on it and just blew through the first two seasons. Season three is about to start. It's out there, man. It is out there in like a good, campy, fun way. You know, like it always is kind of tongue-in-cheek. There's some legit real drama in there, and it's considered a dramatic series, but there's also a good bit of humor and lightheartedness. So it you get the kind of out there stuff, but it's more like the Guardians of the Galaxy, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that type of, you know, not that deep of science fiction, as in like deep into, you know, interplanetary travel and type science fiction.
Yeah, but
there's clones and stuff like that. So there's a lot of like, oh my God, like, it makes it easy to suspend disbelief, whereas, you know, some other shows you might, you know, Breaking Bad, for instance, phenomenal show, one of my favorites of all time, but in the same respect, there were points where it was just kind of like, man, they're really pushing it here. They're really pushing it for me to buy into what's happening on the screen here. It was saved by the fact that the writing was always so sharp in terms of characters. The acting was phenomenal. But the plots were just like, kind of like, oh,
wait a minute.
Let's take a step
back.
How
did they get out of that? Yeah, that's...
Yeah, like, oh, he doesn't check the trunk, huh?
Oh, he happened to get the right thing. That reminds me of... I watched the first two seasons of House of Cards.
Yeah, I'm two episodes through season two.
I liked the first season, but the thing that always bugged me when I was watching it was like, I don't think this really spoils much.
Who cares?
Yeah, I don't know, whatever. People have had time. But it's like there's never any, it's all schemes by Frank Underwood. There's never any like counter scheme to it. Like nobody's ever like trying to work around him. Nobody's trying to, you know, anticipate what he's going to do. And the guy's the whip of the house. So, I mean, he's a very important, high-ranking member.
Yeah.
He's now, somebody that they would be looking to you know, the Republican side would be looking to get around him, or anybody who wants to leapfrog him would be looking to kind of work around him. And it's basically he gets everything he wants, and it all falls neatly into place. And it's just like, that was tough.
See, it's funny that you mentioned that. Because I've only watched two episodes of season three, so I'm not really spoiling much beyond what you've already seen.
Yeah.
But the character, I think her name is Jackie. The guy that he gets to...
Sharp, yeah.
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 there's some machinations going on there.
Okay. Yeah, so,
There was a little hint at it, and then they hint at it even more so in the first couple episodes and even start to give you a little inkling of it. So
yeah, and the second season point, there's
definitely going to be some counter draw towards to try and rebut some of Frank's wild tactics.
Yeah, which is good because I think it's no fun when there's no, like, the whole thing of stories is like, yeah, you have to have that kind of arc. You have to have a conflict. You have to have a goal. You have to have complications towards it to overcome.
And
it's also tough because there's nobody redeeming in the entire series.
No, everyone's
just everybody's tainted and terrible. And
the only good person was Peter, whatever, the senator that in season one. That he just destroyed.
Russo?
I think his name was Pete. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. He still wasn't that good of a person.
Like, he was had drug issues and was kind of a lackluster parent, but he was the only guy that, you know, truly did have good intentions, just couldn't get out of his own way. But everyone else in the show has bad intentions. You see what I'm saying?
Generally, yeah. There was the one...
Because he was trying really hard, and it was Frank was legitimately just trying to destroy his life. So I think if I had to pick, like, the best character from a, I guess you could say, moral standpoint, he's the guy that I would pick. Everyone else kind of, eh.
Yeah, I guess he's a little...
I mean, you see what I'm saying here?
I see what you're saying. I don't buy it, because it's like, he was still... You know, he was still, like, philanderer and everything. He was still,
That's true. He was divorced, though, right?
He was, yeah, but, I mean, it was, like, the backstory was, like, he would hire women to work in his office, and then they would have office affairs.
Yeah.
And, you know, so his hands aren't clean either. No. The intentions maybe were better and more, virtuous, I guess, than... pretty much everybody else.
Yeah. I guess maybe you could say, what was the name of the reporter guy?
Lucas? Is that his name?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
You could say he was...
He was working for the right things.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't really... He kind of got manipulated into making bad decisions, but...
Yeah,
he might take the crown as the best of the worst people in that show.
Yeah, who else? There was the woman who worked for the well place.
She got
screwed. Basically,
Claire gave it.
Yeah, that was about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those. It's kind of like whenever I've watched Walking Dead. There have been times in like season 2 and 3 where it's like, I don't like any character in this show. I don't know why I'm watching it.
Yeah, and they're not bad people either. Well, I mean, they're not bad people like bad people in House of Cards.
Yeah, they're not just acting like, out of malice and manipulation. Not, yeah, it was just
it's just a person. Like if you met Rick Grimes in your everyday life, you'd be like, you know, seems like a good dude, but, you know, I don't want to hang out with him.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it would be like, you know, and most of those people too. I might want to go have a beer with Daryl, but then I'd be like, man, you're kind of weirding me out.
Yeah, so, you're a downer.
Yeah. So I'm gonna hang back. So what? Okay, here's something. Give it to me. Let's narrow it down to like TV shows in the last 5 years.
Right? Okay.
Who would you want to have a beer with the most, and who would you want to have a beer with the least?
In the last, like, oh boy.
So we're talking. We got like. Let's throw in. Let's see. Make it like six. Basically, whenever The Sopranos ended, we'll start with that. So we can throw in The Sopranos. I don't know if you watched Sopranos.
I didn't watch it. No.
Sopranos, Mad Men, The Shield, Breaking Bad, House of Cards, Walking Dead. Let's see. What are the other like prestige shows? The Wire. Let's see here. Yeah, I mean any shows like that in that time frame. What's first one comes to mind?
First one, well, I don't know. They're not. The first guy I thought of was Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec. He doesn't really fit.
Is that the Chris Pratt character?
Yeah, he doesn't really fit though because he's not in like the hour long dramas and stuff. But that was my first instinct. I would say like Dale from The Walking Dead would have been a good guy to have a beer with.
The Walking Dead is the guy you're gonna have a beer with?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
not Draper, not
I never watched Mad Men. I didn't care. I just, eh. I'm just thinking of like the guy who's not gonna go into a weird place, or be a complete jackass or a manipulator. Like that's the least guy would probably be Frank Underwood because it would probably result in me like
like having a $10,000 bar tab and being stuck with it.
And yeah, then he
and him convincing you it was your idea to pay for it.
Right, and then I jump in front of traffic or something. It's like, okay.
Yes, that's the key. That's the end to that story. That's the thing. He convinces you it's your idea to pay a $10,000 bar tab. You don't have that money. Your only course of action is to jump in front of traffic.
Yeah.
This is how things work in the world of Frank Gundrum.
Double knock. Yeah. So I don't know if he'd be the last person I would say, but it's probably the one that comes to mind because it's the most recent that I've watched. So I don't know. I mean, that's a weird question. That's a lot of characters over a lot of time. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to stick with Andy Dwyer, though. I think he'd be cool to hang out with.
All right. I think I would pick.
I'm going to count it. So.
There you go. That's fun. I didn't limit it to anything, just a time period. I think I'm going to go with Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
So that's another one I never watched.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of these that I just never watched.
Friday Night Lights, man. That was like, even the wife, right, hates football, doesn't like watching sports really, except for occasionally some sports. And I'm like, hey, I know this is a show about football, but I've heard that's really not about football. Let's just give it a shot. If you don't like it, we don't have to watch it. It's on Netflix, right? So, boom, we started up. She's hooked. She liked it because it isn't. It's not really about football. There's a lot of scenes on the football field and things like that, but it's not truly about football.
It's about people who play football and coach football.
Like if you've seen the Friday Night Lights, the movie, it's very similar to that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that but yeah, Coach Taylor is awesome, and I would probably have a beer with him, either him or his wife, because I had a mad crush on Coach Wife from that show, Connie Britton, because she's awesome.
She's a looker.
She's got a soft spot in my heart and always will. if I had to pick a least, Phil Leotardo from The Sopranos. God, I hated that guy. God, see, I wish you could. I wish you watched.
Yeah, I don't
know
that guy either.
Great with me on that one. You watched. Let's see. Is there anybody else?
Yeah. What else was he on?
He was. He was in Goodfellas. Crap. He was like a side character. He's in like every mafia movie you've ever seen.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah. He's.
Let's see if I can pull up a picture of him. I might recognize him. Here. I recognize him. I'm looking at him on Google Images, and I recognize him. Didn't tell me much about his character, but, I mean, that's still... I recognize the guy.
So, let's see. Who played Phil Leotardo? Frank Vincent. What else has he been in? Goodfellas. He was Billy Batts in Goodfellas. Okay. He was the Get Your Shine Box guy. That was Dennis Farina. I'm not sure why I thought that was him. Let's see here. Most recent show he was in. Yeah. He's in Casino, too. He was in Casino.
Yeah, he's just, like, nailing all of the...
Yeah, he's in a movie called Wise Guys and Goodfellas, which...
Yeah.
What the hell is Wise Guys?
It's like Raging Bull.
Danny, you know.
Let's see if he's in anything I can remember.
I'm not seeing anything that really jumps out. Let's see here. Casino, if it's Casino or Goodfellas, Copland, Sopranos, obviously. Stargate Atlantis? You didn't watch Stargate Atlantis?
No.
Chicago Overcoat. That sounds like a fantastic piece of awful television. Oh, man. Look at the poster for Chicago Overcoat, please, if you can. Oh, my. That's fantastic. He's sitting there, like, photoshopped over the title, holding a 1920s-era Tommy gun.
Oh, fantastic, yeah.
It's just incredible. Oh, man, I need to watch that movie now.
Everybody who's listening still needs to look at this, because it's pretty
look
terrible.
Up Chicago Overcoat movie poster, because it's awesome. Who else is in that movie? Nobody else.
Even that's his starring role.
Yep, that's the deal. That's the one right there.
I don't know. If I had to go way farther back to something that's not still on TV. I would probably pick like Dan Rydell from Sports Night. I'd just hang out with him.
Oh, you do love your Aaron Sorkin, don't you?
Yeah, he would be fun. Or President Bartlett would be good to have a beer
President
with.
President Bartlett would be cool. Yeah. He would be cool. Let's see, way back. I mean, I almost want to say Jerry Seinfeld, but...
for most those, likely or least?
most. Those characters were so kind of caricature that it'd be tough to... It's tough to get a feel for, like, how you would... If you would want to have a beer with one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I went... If I went back much further, those would probably still be the... I'd probably still have the same answers. I don't know if I would change if I made it no range at all.
Okay.
Maybe Ed the Bowling Alley Lawyer. Did you ever watch that show?
No.
Oh, man. Damn, dude. Need to,
I know. I'm not very cultured in the TV world.
You can borrow any of those. Well, not Ed the Bowling Alley Lawyer, but I got The Wire, I got The Sopranos. You want to watch any of that, you let me know.
You're the one that that I just watched, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but a lot of people have been talking about it, is The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which just came out on Netflix.
I saw that.
It is the popcorn of streaming TV. It's like you don't even realize until halfway through that you're halfway through, and you're like, well, I'm almost finished it, I guess.
Nice.
The
wife fired up Netflix, and that was on like some sort of commercial or something that just auto-played.
Yeah, it just came out like last week, and I watched the whole first season over the weekend, and I just didn't even realize it. I was like 9 episodes in, and I was like, well, I guess I'll finish it. I mean, it's done by Tina Fey. She produced it. Stars Ellie Kemper, who's in The Office. Carol Kane, who's really good in what she does. Yeah, it's a fun, goofy premise. It was good. I mean, I would, you know, if you've got 6 hours that you don't need, you could watch it, and you know, you don't really feel like impacted by it, except the theme song will get stuck in your head. Because it's been in my head all day. All day.
Nice.
I'm tired of it, but it's in my head. But it's good. I mean, it's good enough to watch if you're just looking to break it up. Like, between season 2 and season 3 of House of Cards, that was kind of my intermission.
Your breather, yeah. Palate cleanser.
And it really was. I mean, it's so quirky and kind of sincere, but it's a weird premise. Like, she's... kidnapped and put into a bunker as part of a doomsday cult, and then comes out, and so it's like the fish out of water thing. But she was 15 when she was kidnapped, so she still has the sensibilities that she knew when she was 15, so she quotes like stuff from the 90s all the time. So it's just like, oh, cool, that reference. So it's, you know, it's like geared towards...
Yeah, like people of our generation.
Right, it's like tailor-made for the millennials.
That's awesome. I guess. I'm gonna have to check that out.
It's worth the time. It's some people have said, oh, it's brilliant. I'm like, I don't know if I'd say brilliant,
let's
but
back up the truck a little bit.
It was worth the time that I invested in it. So,
and then I'm gonna check that out. And then along those same lines, Amazon Prime again. See, once we got it, we just like.
Just see everything they have out
there. Binged on everything that, because they got the original programming like Netflix does. They got them original shows too. Yeah. Transparent, which you probably heard of.
A bunch of Golden Globes.
Jeffrey Tambor. Mm-hmm. That's a really good show. One of those like listed as a comedy, but is it really a comedy? There's a lot of like real big poignant moments. So that's a really good show. And another one that's only a half hour, so you can buzz through pretty quick. And then Mozart in the Jungle, which I had, zero interest in watching, but it stars Gael Garcia Bernal. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a Spanish actor who's been in a lot of Pedro Almodovar's movies. And Almodovar makes a lot of really weird, strange movies. but anyway, my wife has a huge crush on this guy. So she's like, we have to at least give it a chance because of him.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right, whatever. And it turned out to be a really, really good show. It's funny. And it's, again, it's only half hour. So we blew through like both those shows in basically a week, which is impressive. But it's easy because they're only half hour shows.
Yeah.
So it's like 12 hours of your time and you're through, you know, both shows, which is nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, if there's your recommendation for the week.
I might look into them. I do have Amazon Prime. I just usually use it for the purpose of good shipping and stuff like that. So
good shipping. Yeah, that's the, you know, the side benefit.
Yeah, right. TV, and they ship your stuff second day most of the time for free.
Yes.
Well, not for free, but you know, as part of the service.
Right. And I said Pedro Almodovar, and that was a mistake on my part. It's actually Alfonso Cuarón is who I should have been saying.
Oh, he did Gravity. Yeah.
Yes.
And what else? He did. He did something else this Oscar season, didn't he?
Cuarón. No, no, that's Alejandro Iñárritu.
Okay.
And him and Alfonso Cuarón are. They're like the Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg.
Gotcha.
The Spanish versions of those guys, basically, kind of came up together, mm-hmm. and you know, got their feet wet in the industry together and have similar styles, if you will. So
I see.
Yeah. so I think we'll kind of wrap it up with that. There's your weekly dose of entertainment
of whatever
of whatever the hell we want to talk about,
right,
on top of Royals,
because it's our time and not yours. You can always press stop.
Yes. So we will, and you know what, we're going to continue to do this even in season. If we have other stuff we want to talk about, we're going to talk about it. So let us know if there's extraneous non-Royal stuff you'd like us to talk about even during the season. It's obviously going to be primarily Royals, just as this show was, but we'll throw some other stuff in there every now and then, because why the hell not. So if you guys want to hear something or talk about something, then hit us up on the emails and the Twitters and let us know.
And if you don't want to hear about it, we are accepting sponsorships at KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.
Yes, if you would like to pay us to not talk about the stuff we want to talk about,
we are not above bribes.
We would gladly accept your check. So either way, you know, either give us a topic or let's make a deal. It's quite simple.
I think this is podcast extortion.
It could be. It could be.
I know some lawyers I can check.
Hey, I'm married to one.
Hey, so there you go.
I'll let you know.
Even better. Get her on retainer.
Yeah, there she is, or she's already on one. so, yeah, that's we're going to wrap it up with this. Hopefully, well, not hopefully, but as each day that passes, there'll be more and more Royal stuff to talk about. The still undefeated Cactus League frontrunners here, and defending American League champions. That's really a thing.
That's
a real
though,
thing that's happening.
The Cactus League is really where you want to go.
The Cactus League is really where the season begins and ends.
True.
but we'll be back next week with another show. So thanks for stopping in. I am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, as always, the undefeated Michael Engel. Be sure to come down this weekend to Kelly's Westport Inn to see Engel just torch and leave fake Ned Chris Kamler in his dust. Who cares how many books you've written? You're not getting, you're not running these 4 miles faster than me. That's what I imagine you're going to say.
Slow burn more than a torch.
Hey,
it's okay.
You know, slow burn that ends with a bang of dynamite. So yes. Kamler will be the Duncan Meyer to your Jerry Seinfeld, for anyone that catches that reference. If you don't, look it up. Look up Jerry Seinfeld and Duncan Meyer, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. But anyway, be sure to stop at Kelly's Westport Inn this weekend. See that race. Have some beers. See what's sure to be a photo finish. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. So be there. We'll be back next week with more Royal stuff. Thanks for stopping in. I'm Jeff Herr for Michael Engel. We'll see you next week, and as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.